from the Star Rental Sports Desk. Your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
Sports Headlines at 4 o'clock hour, brought to you by our friends at Buddy's Goodies and Glass. It's always 420 at Buddy's. Richard Sherman has been released from jail. His felony burglary domestic violence has been eliminated. He will appear in court tomorrow at 8:30 for a second hearing on four charges: criminal trespass, malicious mischief, DUI, and resisting arrest. All of those are either gross misdemeanors or simple misdemeanors. Major League Baseball has upheld Hector Santiago's 10-game suspension for foreign substance use. Tonight's Red Sox-Yankees game has been postponed due to New York's COVID issues. Tom Brady had surgery to repair a partially torn MCL, and the Panthers have signed right tackle Taylor Moten to a four-year, $72 million extension. And four people have been arrested over online racist abuse aimed at members of the England soccer team after losing in Sunday's final. And Conor McGregor said he has a stress fracture prior to breaking his leg in the UFC fight this past weekend. I want to get to this audio in a minute, but that Red Sox-Yankees story kind of bothers me. This is 2021, and we got baseball teams that can't play baseball because of COVID. That to me just doesn't compute, Hugh. I'm sorry, it just doesn't compute that we have baseball teams in 2021 4 months after the vaccine has been released that can't play baseball games because of COVID. I mean, at some point you just got to start forfeiting these, right? I would think.
Well, what are the circumstances? What are the facts as we know them? I mean, did we have an outbreak on one or both of the teams?
The Yankees have had enough players that constitutes that they can't play, at least enough people in contact tracing or positive that they can't play.
And how many of the players have been vaccinated?
Let me find that out for you. I don't have that off the top of my head, but I will look that up for you. But I believe that the Yankees were one of those teams that had not reached the 85% situation that you had to get to.
Sure.
In order to basically be able to go freely when you want to.
So do you understand as a general sense, because I'm trying to understand your position, do you understand in a general sense at all any person's reluctance to get vaccinated?
Do I understand any person's reluctance to get vaccinated if and only if they have a severe health situation where their doctors have told them that the vaccine may be hazardous to them, more hazardous?
So for a healthy person, you don't have any understanding or patience for a healthy person who doesn't want to get vaccinated?
I don't have an understanding. Patience is probably a different word for it. Understanding, no, particularly since I have kids that are unable to get vaccinated right now because they're too young. So that worries me.
Okay. Well, I'll just say this. I'm fully vaccinated. But I had reluctance, like I think a lot of people did. It wouldn't have been my first choice. I would have rather waited until there's more data to come out. But I did feel there's kind of a communal sense that if somebody just says, well, let the rest of the population take on the risks of getting a vaccination, and then I'll just wait it out and see if there's any side effects over the next year or two. That's a selfish proclamation, right? I get that. That was my own thoughts. But I certainly understand somebody's reluctance to get a vaccination. Now, when you start talking about professional athletes, that kind of muddies the waters. I mean, there's certain expectations that the athletes might have. Mm-hmm. Given the nature of their work, you might say, hey, look, if you want to be a player, you got to get vaccinated. And, and then they can say, all right, well, it's my right not to play. But I can understand that there's a difference based on your occupation. you may have no choice. You have to get vaccinated or cease to make a living in that profession.
I think that's fair, and that's kind of where I stand. I certainly stand on what you do for a living and how many other people are you affecting based upon your decision. I think that absolutely has bearing. I'm reading here from the Boston Globe. On Thursday, with 28 teams enjoying a scheduled off day at the end of the All-Star break, the Yankees and Red Sox convened in the Bronx for a single game to open up the second half of the season. Plenty of enticing storylines in the meeting of two rivals. Instead, chaos reigned as the contest was... I love their phraseology. Chaos reigned as the contest was postponed by Major League Baseball due to a COVID-19 outbreak on the Yankees. Three Yankees players had confirmed positive tests, while three more, including to multiple sources, All-Star Aaron Judge, were awaiting further test results as of Thursday afternoon. The inclusion of Judge in that list had implications for the Red Sox, given that five of their players were in the clubhouse with Judge on Monday and Tuesday during the All-Star festivities at Coors Field. So this stems from, really, it sounds like it stems from Judge because he was with all these other guys in the same clubhouse for 2 days. We do not know if Judge actually has been vaccinated or not. We do know that the Yankees, actually, it does say in the New York paper that the Yankees actually had received, gotten up to the 85%, but they still have as many as six positive tests.
Well, 85%, six is more than 15%. So, I mean,
well, you can still have a positive test. You can still have a positive test if you have if you had the vaccination. You can still test.
That's
positive.
What I'm saying. The implication is that you have the vaccination, and I mean, that's hit a lot of teams, right? So when you say that you're expressing your ire over this, really, what it comes down to, black and white, do you believe that Major League Baseball players should be mandated to be vaccinated?
I think that if you get 100% team, you don't have to worry about any of this, because even if they do test positive for COVID, I still think you should be able to play the game if you get a team that's 100% vaccinated. I've got more of an issue, I think, with, you know, a situation like John Rahm, where, you know, he goes, now he only hurts himself, he doesn't hurt a team, but, you know, he's confiscating $1.7 million because he decided to wait to get vaccinated. It's to me, it's not an anger thing, really. It's just it's hard for me to grasp it, I guess, because I know my life has changed unbelievably for the better in the last 2 months. Unbelievably. And I guess I just don't understand why people wouldn't want to feel the same way.
Okay, that's a long answer. It's a good answer, but it didn't answer what really, if you're going to express a lot of ire over the Yankees, yes or no, should Major League Baseball players be mandated to be vaccinated or withheld from team activities?
Yes.
They should. Okay.
Yes. Now, I don't think that's going to happen.
Then you made your position clear. Then you have the right to have that ire.
Because their actions so directly affect the actions of so many other people, and the actions, and hey, maybe we find out that all these guys that tested positive for COVID have all been double vaxxed.
I really doubt that.
But think about all the people that are being implicated here. Every single one of the 45,000 people that were going to go to the game, the players on the Yankees, the players on the Red Sox, all of these are being implicated because a couple of people's decisions.
Okay, fair enough. So presumably, if you have that feeling about Major League Baseball players, you have that feeling about professional athletes in the three other major sports.
Yes, baseball.
And probably some other golf and what
happens. But I know it's not going to happen.
Any other professions outside of professional sports that you would say that those professions should be mandated to have a vaccine or be withheld from working in that profession? Is there any other professions?
The only one that would really jump to mind would be healthcare workers. That would be the one that would jump to mind.
Pilots.
But now we're taking it outside the realm of sports.
No, I understand.
I don't want to turn it into
you understand what I'm driving at.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, for us to sit on a radio station and say, okay, we in essence are calling for the mandate of a every single member of a certain profession, a mandate to be vaccinated. I mean, just, you know, that's a pretty big statement.
I would like that to happen. I know for a fact it never will, because there's a thing called the Players Union that would never allow it to happen.
No, I understand, but you believe that the players should be mandated anyways.
Well, yeah, because I just think that the impact of Aaron Judge has much more of an impact than me, than you, than Joe in Federal Way that goes, you know, that maybe works in his home office or what have you. I mean, that the impact of these guys is felt nationwide, worldwide, and certainly hugely within their own cities. You know, there was probably 45,000 people that were taking their kids to the baseball game tonight. Oh, sorry, can't go because either the testing policies are inaccurate, which would be awful if this was just a mistake. B, these guys did get vaccinated and still tested positive for COVID. And in that case, I don't know why they're even postponing the game. If we knew that they were all vaccinated, why would they even be postponing the game? Or C, some percentage of these six players have decided not to get vaccinated. And the C is what confuses me. But, you know, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I just think, yeah, you get into other industries. I mean, I would say, okay, do college players? I mean, a lot of the same things you could say about, you know, the fans in the stadium and all the people that are expecting, that are relying on that commerce. Should all college players be, you know, should, you know, on the day we had the 110 degrees here, I was flying that day, and there was numerous cancellations because the ground crews were calling in sick.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it literally grounded an entire aviation industry for a day. So should ground crew guys, should air traffic controllers? I mean, it's just interesting when you start thinking, okay, what profession? Once you start saying a profession, an entire profession should be vaccinated, and you're calling for that, then, you know, it just brings into question liberties and
sure.
It's just hard to say, okay, I'm going to make the declaration that you need to get vaccinated.
Right, right. Well, certain people have,
and you know, and I'm going to, in fact, I'm going to take away your choice to get vaccinated.
Yeah. Well, certain people have certain responsibilities in their job, and they get paid very, very handsomely to do those jobs. And if they can't do those jobs because of something they choose not to do, then I think there should be ramifications for that. Let's move on. I didn't even mean to take 12 minutes on this, but it just bugged me when I read
Russell,
that.
No, I got
when
it.
I read that story. Hey, Russell Wilson, full circle with Dan Patrick. We all knew what he said in February. My God, we knew what he said in February. It's all we talked about for like the next 2 months, based upon what he said in February. What did he say this week to Dan Patrick?
Then we had the interview a couple of days later. Do you hear from Man? How long does it take before the Seahawks call you after the interview with me?
I don't know, maybe a couple hours probably.
I just wanted to know why you didn't look like you were having a good time. And then it felt like you wanted or welcomed the opportunity to get this off your chest. Is that fair?
No, I think that more than anything else, you know, we just had a dialogue, a conversation, and you know, I think it definitely blew out of proportion in terms of the moment and what it became. It was a little unfortunate, but we're excited about getting back the ball and playing, you know, and fans.
Is your relationship different with the Seahawks?
I would say it's stronger. I mean, me and Pete have gotten even closer. Okay. I mean, we've always been super close. So, you know, we had to have a great heart-to-heart. And just, you know, me and Coach Carroll's relationship is stronger than ever, and I think that's the best part.
All right, so there's three big parts of that. We'll start with the first one. It took the Seahawks all of 2 hours to call Russell Wilson after he was. So I guess, Hugh, that gives us a good confirmation on how hot the Seahawks organization was at that interview.
Probably, sure. I mean, we can infer that they weren't happy about it, but they might bristle. It's possible they could bristle and say, hey, we heard our quarterback very concerned about a topic or two. and we reached out as a gesture to address those concerns, because we're going to be at our very best as a franchise when our quarterback is at his very best, and he's going to be at his very best when his mind is at his best place. So they might say that it's more along the lines of that description, but I'll dance with you at the idea that they weren't happy about the Russell Wilson interview with
Dan Patrick. Dan Patrick. The second part of it, the quote, blown out of proportion. I don't know how many times I have used those exact words from February, March, April, May. I'm obviously not the only one. Greg Bell's been preaching that to us for a long, long time. Blown out of proportion. And I will be honest that I underestimated how hot the Seahawks were at this, and I probably underestimated at how frustrated Russell Wilson was. But the trade part of this whole thing, which is I think what he is referring to when he says blown out of proportion, that part was, in my opinion, almost entirely national media created. And it bugged me all winter and early spring long, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, I'm just trying to reason this thing through in the best way. All right, so you're trying to take, your conclusion is that this was indeed blown out of proportion, and you're taking as evidence that it was blown out of proportion that Russell Wilson told Dan Patrick after the fact that it was blown out of proportion. Is it possible that even if there had been a moderate issue there, something more than insignificant, if there had been a moderate issue and it actually had mushroomed into something that was fairly moderate, bordering on severe discord between Russell and the organization, but that it finally got resolved, is it possible that Russell Wilson now would also say that was blown out of proportion? Meaning, that sounds to me like Russell Wilson would say it was blown out of proportion regardless of internally how severe the strife was. That sounds like Russell Wilson speak to me. It was blown out of proportion. And guess what? Russell Wilson doesn't have a patent on that. Athletes and everybody, people, as a general course, I'm 57 years old. That's what people always say.
Or taken out of context, right?
To minimize something, they say, oh, that's blown out of proportion.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not putting a lot of stock on Russell Wilson saying that.
I wish Dan Patrick would have followed up with what, and far be it from me to tell Dan Patrick how to do a radio show, but I would have liked to hear him follow up with what exactly was blown out of proportion. Was your frustration with the offensive line blown out of proportion, or was the trade talk that ensued because of your comments with me, was it the trade talks that were blown out of proportion? Because to me, I've always kept those in two completely separate categories.
Yeah, and I think there's a third topic. It's Russell Wilson's role and function within the offense.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you had, I thought, a very credible article that was written in The Athletic with Mike Sando
I can't remember. And Michael Shandugar, I believe.
Michael Shandugar. And who's the third author on that?
Jason
Jenks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just reading that sounded like a very credible argument. And they cited a meeting where Russell Wilson essentially stormed out of a meeting in frustration about his role in the offense. So I think that's what Russell Wilson, in a nutshell, what is Russell Wilson upset? He says he wants to get protected better, and he wants to be a bigger part of the offense. Exactly what we were talking about all last season. Let Russ cook. Right? That was the topic. De jure, because that's the day. But
right.
Topic de jure a year ago was how much does Russ Wilson cook? So those are the two topics that Russell has voiced his disdain for, or his concern about, and to the extent that that the trade were in the works. I think there were trade talks. And maybe they were never going to happen, but I think there was something more than nothing. I think there was more discussion and more consideration about a trade this year than in any other year that Russell Wilson's been a Seahawk. Now, you could say it still was insignificant, but I don't know. I think the story is just past enough of the sniff test. If the trade talks are only actually, you're only actually going to be traded if you go from zero, you're never going to be traded, to 100, I'm trading you in the next 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And anything above 50, so 51 or higher means you're getting traded. Russell Wilson has been a zero for 10 years. Mm-hmm. He might have only been a 25
right
this year. It might not have been close to that 51 threshold. Maybe it was a 45. It obviously wasn't a 51 because he would have been traded by the metrics that I just laid out. But I think that it was more than the zero than it's been for 10 years.
Well, yeah, because if I'm Ryan Pace from the Chicago Bears and I read Mike Florio and I read Jason Lockenfor and I read all this hysteria, I'm picking up the call. I'm picking up the phone first thing, and I'm calling John Schneider. Hey, buddy, Russ available? I hear he is, according to Mike Florio and Jason Lockenfor.
At the end of the day, you're always going to try and douse that fire. Russell Wilson's whatever fire, I don't know if that was a spark or if that was a little brush fire or that whether that was a bonfire. Whatever it was, we know that on this day, now that Russell Wilson's going to be a Seahawk for 21, he's going to try and douse that brush fire in the eyes of the public.
422 on 950 KJR. We have ourselves an NBA Finals, and it was a damn good game last night. A lot of fun. If you're not tuning in, you got a three-game series. Now's the time to tune in. It looks like finals basketball. We'll chat about it with Hugh Millen next on 950 KJR. Awesome.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for the Huskies and the Kraken. Seattle Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Softy and Dick without the soft one. Hugh Breedlove Millen is in with us. Switching to the NBA here as I get these emails after each NBA Finals game. Viewership for NBA Finals game number 4 on ABC up 35% from last year. Now, a couple of reasons for that. The main reason for that is that the bubble was awful last year ratings-wise. Just people just did not care about the NBA Finals last year in the bubble. So every single game has been up from last year. However, every single game hasn't been up this much. 35% is pretty significant. Peaked with 12.559 million viewers. Most of the other three games have been in that 8 to 9 million viewer range. And a simple reason for that, Hugh, is the first three games of this series were completely uncompetitive. Double-digit win for the Suns. Double-digit win for the Suns. Double-digit win for the Bucks. In the first three games, and we finally got a really good, hard-fought basketball game that wasn't decided until the final minute yesterday.
Yeah, and I felt like it was, it depends on how big of a fan you are of defensive basketball. I didn't feel like the Suns just couldn't get, not only couldn't they not get a bucket, it was tied at 93 or 94, and from that point, the Suns never even got close to a decent look at and a real legitimate chance. I mean, you know, the Giannis block was incredible in there. But, you know, the Chris Paul here, there's all this chatter about, you know, where does Chris Paul rank in the pantheon of point guards? And right at the least opportune time, he has his turnover. And it just seemed like it was Phoenix not executing offensively down the road and you know, turn the tails and give the credit to the Bucks. But I thought that was the surprising part. Is at no time did you ever really think, okay, that was a legitimate chance for a bucket.
Yeah. Phoenix did not have a field goal from Devin Booker at 2:52, and it was 97-97 when Devin Booker made a mega jump shot with 2:52 left, which, by the way, he shouldn't have been in the game to make that 2-point jump shot because he should have fouled out two different times in that game and wasn't calling the foul. They did not make a field goal until 14 seconds left.
Yeah,
2:52 to 14 seconds left. They did not make a field goal. And one of those, and what would have been an easy field goal was the lob that you alluded to, the lob to DeAndre Ayton and the block by Giannis Antetokounmpo, which people are calling, and I think rightfully so. It's not as It's not as dramatic. It's not as free-flowing as LeBron James tracking down Andre Iguodala from behind and pinning the ball against the backboard in the game against the Warriors that sealed it up for Cleveland. But what Giannis had to do, he had to be the primary defender, and then he had to be the help side defender on a quick lob pass that took about a second. The fact that he can go from defending Booker to jumping in the air in one motion and blocking a dunk from a 7-footer on an alley-oop is unbelievably difficult.
Well, I don't think it was a pinpoint pass. I mean, it was a very good pass, you know, as a kind of almost a no-look, you know, like a hook shot. So there was a lot of style.
Yes,
with
like
the
a
pass.
Flip alley-oop,
but
yes.
But if you're talking about if you get a big man and say, okay, show me, take a salad plate and suspend it in air and say, okay, that's the target. That's exactly where I want the ball. He missed the target by certainly a foot and a half, maybe even as much as a couple feet. So that extended his body, that slowed it down. There wasn't a chance. There were, that, you know, when we're talking about micro fractions of a second, I wouldn't call it a missed pass because it wasn't turnover worthy. But if you're talking about trying to execute in the highest number of circumstances, which would include trying to pack it against Giannis, mm-hmm. then you want that ball a little bit, you know, closer to the middle of the rim. Well, and so that was just enough, you know, not a bad pass, but not a perfect pass, and that gave Giannis enough time to recover.
What's fascinating to me about this series, and while I wasn't fired up, I guess put it this way. As a basketball purist, I was excited for this series because I really felt like the Bucks and Suns were almost identical as far as how good of teams they were. And I really had a tough time determining who was going to win the series. And it doesn't have the cachet of Durant, AD and LeBron, you know, Brooklyn, LA. You know, it doesn't have the potential that it could have, which would have driven the ratings, but it had two teams that I thought were very, very closely matched. People didn't get into it, rightfully so, because the first two games were blowouts for Phoenix. Third game was blowout for the Bucks. And then people, as you could see from the ratings that I read out, started to watch this game as it got going. I mean, the ratings continued to go up and up and up and up on ABC throughout the night, where now I think people are like, okay, these are two closely matched teams, and we've got a three-game series, and I think the ratings are going to be really good over the last three games, if we have three. What is intriguing to me is Chris Paul, and whether or not we're ever going to see this season in this series the real Chris Paul again. First 11 playoff games for Chris Paul, never had more than three turnovers in any one of those games. The last three games, he has had 5, 4, and 6, including the turnover that arguably cost them the basketball game that led to a bucket on the other end. And I'm wondering if, you know, is he just going to get it back because of the energy he gets from the Phoenix fans in game number 5? Or is just this bully ball of Drew Holiday and Bobby Portis just beating on that poor old man, is it taking too much of a toll on the guy?
Well, I think the answer to that question is going to be the legacy for Chris Paul. If you're talking about him among the very greats, I mean, I think Magic Johnson is kind of rightfully has his perch as the greatest point guard of all time. I don't hear many experts disputing that. I think the number two point guard in history is totally up for grabs.
Stockton doesn't have a title, so, and Paul could pass Stockton on the titles list, which would really go a long way.
Sure. So I think whoever is number two is a big drop off from Magic. So if Chris Paul has been thrust into that discussion, you can have a bad game if your legacy is going to be that of a great. But then equally vital to your legacy is that you come back after a bad game and you just dig deep and you just find a way to rectify. So Chris Paul, you know, he had that kind of dismayed look. I don't know what that look was. That could have been a good look of like, okay, you got me tonight.
Yeah.
But wait till you see what I give you the next game. That might have been what he was thinking, or it might have been like, what the hell? You know, I don't know. I mean, that was a hell of a poker face by him after that turnover. But that was a big time, you know, career. I don't want to say it's a career defining moment. I don't think it was that impactful. But that was a big gaffe, and let's see how he responds, because the great ones do.
And we don't have a game until Saturday, which gives him some time, a little bit of time to rest and recover. I honestly think I was shocked to see the spread, when the first spread that came out. I thought it was going to be 5.5, 6, maybe even 6.5 for Phoenix. I saw it at 3.5, and I think that Phoenix comes out and handles Milwaukee in this game. In game number 5, I think it's a very evenly matched series. I think Milwaukee probably gets game 6, and this could come down to the final 2 minutes of game number 7. We'd all love to see that. But just it seems like this whole NBA playoffs, when you've started to count a team out or say, oh, you've lost your momentum, or Devin Booker's got a bad game, and people, the talk shows start talking bad about him, what ends up happening is those teams usually come back and have monster games.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, when you talk about, okay, this doesn't have the star power, but I mean, I think all the sports lament this through every passing of a torch. And I'm not saying there's a passing of a torch here, but you know, in the mid '80s, when the Celtics, you know, they and the Sixers to a lesser extent, but the Celtics were the cachet team. You know, of course they had Bird and Parrish and McHale and DJ and Ainge and all those guys, all names across the board. And then when Detroit knocked them off, Detroit initially, they didn't really, of course, they had Isaiah Thomas, but you got to know Vinnie Johnson. You got to know John Sally. Dennis Rodman.
You saw him every year.
You got to know them after you saw him play. But at first it was like, oh, my God, the networks, they don't want Detroit. What the hell? You know, and you know, because of Detroit's style of play, really, in the end, I don't think they were really loved by many, but they made household names, and if you were an NBA fan, you got to know the Detroit Pistons.
And now you know the Suns and the Bucks are two more teams that you know. We got to run to a break here, but I totally get your point. We're getting teams now. We know the Hawks now. Didn't know the Hawks before. We know the Suns now. We know the Bucks now. We didn't know them before. Testimonials coming up, 49451. Your thoughts on the Russell Wilson comments you heard. Richard Sherman's the charges have been lessened against Richard Sherman. Another hearing coming up tomorrow. What do you think of my vaccination take with the just flummoxed, perplexed as why we are still in July of 2021 and canceling Major League Baseball games? Are you as confused as I am? That coming up next on 950.
Bel Grande.
Coming to you live from the Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio 950 KJR. This is Textimonials.
LOL, semicolon, parentheses.
Take it away, Dave Softy Mahler and Dick Fain.
Oh, a lot to get to on the texting lines. We've had a plethora of different subjects of conversation today. Richard Sherman update. For those of you just tuning in, we will... I'll get you a little two-line update on Richard Sherman here before we go into the text. He's been released from jail. His felony burglary domestic violence has been eliminated. He will appear in court tomorrow at 8:30 for a second hearing on 4 charges. That may have been pushed to 2, you're hearing, Jackson?
Yeah, I saw on Twitter that the court hearing is 2, so we'll
okay, we'll reconfirm, because the original, I saw Greg Bell tweet about an hour ago that said 8:30. It may be pushed back, but you know what? We're having Greg next segment, so he can confirm for us. 4 charges, criminal trespass, malicious mischief, DUI, and resisting arrest. We also played the Russell Wilson, Dan Patrick stuff. What do we got, Jackson?
Super Bowl 49? Really? We're still doing this?
I'm sorry, I apologize, but I've heard 2 very influential offensive minds today. It was actually, I saw it too. I saw it. They played it on one of the ESPN talk shows. Like it wasn't PTI. It was the one before that with Pablo Torre, and they played this. And I was like on my treadmill going, I've got to play this audio for you. So that's why it was pertinent, because Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan are in Hugh Millen's boat on the Russell Wilson pass in the Super Bowl that it was the right call. What else we got?
Hugh, you can and must fire one person after the play. Who is it?
Who is it, Hugh? Who you got to fire after the play?
Oh, jeez. Well, I'm on record. I told you, I think the guy that disavowed his responsibility the most, given how simple his job was, the guy that is most perplexing to me was Kearse. Because all Kearse had to do was move Brandon Browner literally 2 feet, less than a yard, or had he himself, let's say he wasn't going to move Brandon Browner at all, if he had just ripped to the inside to try and evade, then he would have gotten in the way of Butler and you'd have a touchdown. Yeah. So given the simplicity of his job, the guy who most egregiously didn't do his job was Jermaine Kearse.
We've got Husky on Husky crime there, Jackson. And
that's not crime. It's just stating the fact.
The funny part is the fact that you wouldn't be at the goal line without Kearse.
You wouldn't be in the Super Bowl without
that
Kearse.
That too.
That's a different topic.
That's true.
That's a different topic.
That's very true. That's very fair. But the man that had the most egregious miss on that play, according to Hugh Millen, based upon the simplicity of the play, was number 15. What's next?
Look, all this about Richard Sherman is only a DUI. He's drinking and driving and resisting arrest. Everything else is a family problem.
I agree with that, Hugh. I agree with that wholeheartedly. Whatever happened at his house, obviously there was no violence at his house. We heard his wife on the phone when he was still there. I mean, evidently there potentially was a scuffle with the uncle, but then he didn't even get into the in-laws' house. This, to me, is a DUI investigation. This, to me, is a guy making a very, very, very bad error in judgment and putting anybody that was driving his way on 520 at some serious risk. That, to me, is the story here.
Yeah, and the judge is he certified that. But there is a point where just, quote-unquote, just family matters become a matter for the state. I mean, at some point, if you have domestic violence, there's going to be an assault charge, and it could be a felony assault charge. So I think, in this case, the texter is right, because that's how the judge ruled it. It's just a misdemeanor. But I think as a general context, there is that threshold in every case where, hey, you go too far, it's more than a family matter.
Wow, you just said the texter is right. We don't hear that on testimonials very often, that the texter is right. But that's bold. But you and I both agreed that texter was correct. What's one final one, Jackson?
Russell Wilson has a future in politics.
Well, yeah, I mean, he has a way about him that he can spin some words and say a lot of words without saying anything at all. But, you know, the words that stuck with me were blown out of proportion. Those quote, blown out of proportion, is what he said with Dan Patrick. But I do understand what you're saying too, Hugh, is, you know, this is Russell Wilson after the fact saying something was blown out of proportion. That doesn't mean at the time it was necessarily blown out of proportion.
Politics and or public relations. at this juncture, the whatever mending has been done, he's going to be a Seahawk for 2021. And for him to say everything was blown out of proportion, that's his way of just trying to diffuse any of the severity of what he said. And you know, but he's still got the issue. Ask Walter Jones. Does he have an issue amending the statement that he made with the offensive line? I mean, Russell can say that it's all blown out of proportion, but what are those linemen saying when they the media, but when they are having a pitcher of beer by themselves, what are they saying? Is any one of them miffed about that comment? I don't know. Right. I don't know, but it's certainly possible.
Greg Bell is going to fill us in on everything Richard Sherman related, our friend from the Tacoma News Tribune, and we might even ask him about that blown out of proportion quote from Russell Wilson to Dan Patrick. We'll do that in the next segment after Top of the Hour headlines on 950.